this, the content of container class protocol won't make any sense to you right now, but just remember that I use that phrase. That group of operations along with this one, size, which could be moved down to this list down here, are examples of methods that are going to appear in a number of different classes that are called container classes. Now, the vector is your first example of a container class. A container class is a class designed to hold objects of another type. So it's like a bag, and puts a vector bag has a certain structure, and you're going to have list bags, and deck bags, and queue bags, and stacks, and just different ways of putting data into some sort of containing environment. And the vector is your first one. I guess, in some sense, an array is really your first one, if an array only were a proper type. But array, of course, is not. It suffers from most of the defects that a C string suffers from, a lot of them, and therefore kind of an error-prone mechanism in a lot of cases. So let's talk about what these would mean. Size, of course, returns the size of the vector. Empty returns a Boolean value, which is true if the size is equal to zero, and false if the size is not equal to zero. Clear makes a vector empty, so that makes it have size equal to zero. Front returns the front element of the vector. That would be the index zero element. Back returns the last element of the vector, and that would be the element at what index?
M minus one.
What's M? You got two parameters, size and capacity. Right. So you want to do size minus one. Okay. Then we have the concept of push and pop, both occurring at the back of the vector. The push operation in general is one that is used to add an element to a container. And a pop operation removes an element from the container. Push back means put it at the back end. Pop back means remove something from the back end. So push back will take a parameter because you've got to say what element you want to put at the back of the vector. Pop back will not take a parameter because you're going to get rid of whatever is there. You don't have to name it. Okay? So let's go now back to how we would implement pop back. Let's draw a picture of what this vector looks like. We've got index 0, 1, 2, out through capacity, which I'm going to call C, minus 1. And here's my, this is going to be my allocated footprint. And somewhere also you'll have an S minus 1. So S is the size, okay? Well, the actual vector object consists of that data. So to pop back, what you want to do is just kind of ignore the fact that element is there, and that can be accomplished by decrementing the size. So pop back is basically just decrement the size parameter. That's all you got to do. Now you do want to do a little safety check though, because if the size were zero and you decremented it, what would its value become? The type of size is size underscore two, which is an unsigned type. So when you decrement it, when you decrement zero, it can't become minus one because that's not part of the value set, right? So what it becomes is the largest, it cycles around, becomes the largest integer in this type. And more than likely, this is a 2-byte integer. I mean, yeah, 16-bit integer. So decrementing zero will make it the value 65,000, whatever, 2 to the 16 minus 1 is. And so that would be kind of a mistake because the vector would suddenly think that its size is huge. And in fact, that would more than likely be greater than the capacity of the vector, and all kinds of stuff would get messed up structurally for the vector. But you test first, if size is bigger than zero, decrement it. Or to put it another way, if size equals zero, send an error message and return, otherwise decrement, something like that. Pushback takes this parameter T. So this is my current vector, right here. If I want to make it one element bigger and put that element, a copy of that element there, then what I've got to do is increase the size of S by one and insert and put a copy of my incoming parameter right there. Right. So here what I want to do is increment size and what's this thing called again? Content. Now this can also get you in trouble because we have to maintain this logic. You know, a logical constraint on our design is that size is less than equal to capacity. Right? We can never allow size to exceed capacity. Because capacity is the size of our allocated memory footprint. So this can get you in trouble. If size equals capacity, then you can't increment it here. So if size is bigger than capacity, what you have to do is take a timeout and reset the capacity to something bigger. And then go back and do this. So let's see what we said about that. Okay, if size equals zero, I return zero, indicating I couldn't pop back. Otherwise, decrement size returns one. Here I just settled for documentation apparently. But if you really want to make this call to set capacity. Now, what I would like for you to do is everyone look in the library, the code library, and look at the implementation of pushback. Okay, so well, there's that. Here, this is the actual file. We've got this file's got this thing, default capacity, set equal to 10. There's your equality operator. Inequality operator for his public methods. What I'm going to do is shield your eyes from that. It's going to be dizzying. There we go. Here's the pushback. The size is bigger than capacity. Then we first, there's this special case you've got to worry about that says, what if the capacity is zero? Then you make it one. Otherwise, if the capacity is non-zero, then what you do is you set the capacity to be twice what it used to be. So you double the capacity. And that allows you then to proceed. Size is now, size would have been equal to capacity, so now it's equal to capacity divided by two. You've got plenty of size to work with, and therefore you can increment size and set the resulting space equal to T value that's incoming. Okay? And there's your popback. The fact we're doubling here will be important later. You may wonder why you're doing that. The short answer, the intuitive short answer here is, if you double the capacity, you surely aren't going to do that very often. And this is an expensive timeout to take. And so you don't want to be doing it very often. I want to show you how convenient this public interface can be. Suppose you want to have a client program that reads in, suppose we want to read in a bunch of numbers input by the user. And we don't know how many numbers that's going to be. So we ask the user to keep entering numbers and to enter a zero when they want, no, enter a non-number when they want to quit. Let's say it's enters. Then you make yourself a vector type in and call it D. And you do this while CN read it into some variable num, I'll say num is a type in. And notice this is already complicated. This is the input operator, the one that's overloaded for type in, right? This will attempt to read an integer token out of that string. And whenever it's successful, it will read it and stuff into that variable. When it's not successful, it will not put anything into that variable, but it will return a zero, meaning a false value for having accomplished its task, and that will make this, that will break us out of this while loop. So this will have the effect of reading integers until the user enters something that's not an integer, which is already pretty clever, right? Now I want to put that number into something to hold it. all those VE dot pushback, that code right there is all you gotta write to suck in all the input the user wants to give you. If you did it right here, see out V, we've overloaded the output operator for this vector class. That will output for you to look at all of the numbers that you just input. The problem is you wouldn't be able to tell them apart, would you? Because this will output them with nothing in between them. So to make it more sensible, you can do V.display. And you can see out with maybe the space character. Between all the numbers. That would output all the vector elements with one space between them so you can tell them apart. And that would probably look pretty much like the user's input line look. Notice statically prepared vector, even though it's a dynamic allocation neuron, it's all being taken care of by the vector class itself. You don't have to worry about memory management, no news, no deletes, just very nice, smooth code doing exactly what you'd like to do. I mean, you can't describe in words what you want to do with any fewer sentences than this. It's just like read in numbers until you something the size of the number is read in, put numbers in a vector starting at zero and going to the right, and then display all the numbers you put in that vector. Now, I'm gonna show you slide 8 here. This lower bound algorithm, you're going to need to implement this for a vector to do your project one. This is slide 8 in this chapter on algorithms. You don't have to, there's a lot of stuff in this chapter. But getting to the point where you can at least implement that version of binary search is going to be critical to your ability to finish off the password server project. So what I want to try to do for the rest of the day today is talk about the first 8 slides in this chapter. Then you will have, Chris Lockman. Hey. I can't understand. Is this Matt? Okay. You realize I'm in class, right? Yeah, I am scheduled. We'll take a break. Around. I'll call you back in a minute. Bye. Sorry. This is a bad idea. I've got a bunch of calls that just absurdly interrupt us. That does let me know that this class will be in 5 minutes, so this is probably, it might be the more productive thing to do is just, let's talk about that one algorithm, what it does. You can implement it, I've got it here as if it were for an array, but you can implement it for a vector by just passing in a vector object here instead. Remember, the vector knows its own size, so you can pass in a single parameter with the vector. Now these should be probably size underscore t variables instead of unsigned int, although it probably won't matter. You basically set the low index equals 0, and the high index to the size of the vector, so it'd be v dot size. Mid is not given an initial value. What you're going to do is run a while loop while low is less than high. Notice that starts out 0 and the size of the vector. So mid becomes the midpoint between low and high. You test the value of the vector element at the midpoint index against t. I said there was only one parameter. There's two parameters. There's only one for the container instead of two, but then there's a second parameter, which is the thing you're searching for. We're looking for t. So you compare the midpoint of the vector with t. If it's less, then you redefine your search range to be the upper half of the vector. If it's not less, then you redefine your search range to be the lower half of the vector. Of course, either one of those has the effect of changing, making low and high get closer together. You keep doing this until low and high collide, and then you return low. Now let me tell you what this does. This returns the so-called lower bound index of 4t. You can look in the couple of slides preceding this to figure out what the lower bound index, you know, more discussion on that. But the bottom line on the lower bound index is this. If t is in the vector, it's the first occurrence of t in the vector. The assumption on this is that the vector is in sorted order. So the elements of the vector are in increasing order. So lower bound index of, is the first index for T is found in the vector. It might be there for one more time. If it's in the vector, it's the first index where it is. If it's not in the vector, then the lower bound index is the place where it ought to be. Now, you got to bear in mind that let's say that T is very large, bigger than all the elements of the vector, and the place where it ought to be would be out at the end of the vector where we're in the element yet. So one of the legitimate return values for the lower bound is the actual size of the vector, which is one index beyond the legitimate range of indices. Now, this is a test program I'm going to show you. You will enter characters for storage into a vector B. It will be copied to a deck, but you don't know what it is yet, and an array, you do know what that is, in several ways, and then sort it with various order relations. Then the program enters an interactive phase where you will be prompted to enter search values. The sample value will be used to determine your original input and the end of the program. So I'm going to use a dot for the sample. I'm going to enter characters, not a dot, but with a dot, so I'm finished. Now what it's going to do is go through a loop just like that, and push these things back into a vector, and display them for me, and do some sorting stuff. But now the bottom line is going to be, I'll say this, okay? Get it up higher for you. All right, I'm going to enter a search value. So we might look for N, for example. There's a lower bound and the upper bound. The upper bound algorithm returns the index one past the range of N's in that vector. Suppose I enter M for my search value. And if you had to put an M in this, it's not in there, first of all. And so if you had to put it in, you have to wedge it in right there and shove all this stuff down to the right to keep everything in alphabetical order. So that those two illustrate the meaning of lower bound. So if I put in, you might want to investigate the boundary cases. For example, if I put in A, the lower bound is here at the front of the vector. I have to put the A here and shove everything else to the right. I put in a Z, lower bound index is the first invalid index of that vector, because that's where I have to put Z on the back end of that vector to keep the order, keep the alphabetical order. Those are the boundary cases. W, lower bound index is that, upper bound index is still one past the end of the vector, because that's one past the last occurrence of W in the range. Put in a P. Lower bound index will be there, upper bound index will be one past the last P in the vector. So we're going to talk more about this next week, but those of you who want to get started, this is the algorithm. The lower bound is all you need. You won't need upper bound, but you're going to need the lower bound algorithm in your password server. The first thing we'll do next Tuesday in class is go through the password server project document in detail as to what you've got to do. I will be referring to this algorithm in there, the lower bound algorithm. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering how it's related to the project. Is that where the signatures were, I'm just trying to relate that to the project. I'm not sure where it was. Signatures.
Well, what the password server is going to do is maintain the password data, which is username signatures, in a vector. The vector is going to be sorted by username. So the username will determine the order of the vector. But since it is in sorted order, then you can search using binary search. You can search for a username in that vector. And actually, the specific version of binary search you want to use is this lower bound algorithm, because that will return the index of the location for the data.
Okay, so this is searching for the username, and that would parlay into the signature?
It has to work in practice is the vector is going to have to contain pairs. Remember, a vector element is only one end, right? It's going to have to contain a pair object. That pair object will be something that consists of a username for the first element and a signature for the second element. In order to sort, in order to maintain order in the vector, you don't have to write a sort algorithm, because all you got to do is just make sure whenever you insert a new user, you put them in the right place, and the vector will say sort. But the order relation for that vector has got to be defined for pairs. So that means you've got to overload the less than operator for pairs in such a way that it ignores the second element, the signature element, and only compares the first element, the user ID element. That's the mechanism that you use to make the vector order things by username. And every one of the four, you got to check password, create user, delete user, and change password. And every one of those begins with a call essentially to a lower bound algorithm to find that user in the database, in the vector. And that lower bound algorithm will return an index, and the value of that index won't really tell you whether or not you found the user. You have to then go to that element and see, check to see if that is the right user or not. And if it is, the check password, then you check to see if the user's entered signature is equal to the stored signature. And if it is, then you then the password will return one, which will mean that user is authenticated. And that same process will be used for every one, all four of the operations. The lower bound algorithm, if the user is not found, say you want to create a user, you call the lower bound algorithm for that user, a pair of that user being the first element. Okay. Then you first check to see if you have already a user by that name. If you do, then you reject the new user. You can't have two users on the same user. But if on the other hand, the thing that vector element is pointing at is not, it doesn't have the same username as the one you want to create, then you got to wedge a new one in there. You've got to wedge something into a vector, you have to leapfrog copy the higher elements of the vector up one notch, and then copy the new thing into that element. It's always the lower bound algorithm that tells you where you have to do your insert. So every one of those four methods will use the lower bound algorithm to often tell you where you got to look. And you always have to check to make sure that you're taking care of the case where the lower bound algorithm returns one past the end of the legitimate range before you try to dereference or access the bracket, access the vector. And otherwise you'll get an error. So, but that's the key. The lower bound algorithm is what allows you to search this vector of data. The vector elements are pairs consisting of a username and a user signature. The less than operator is overloaded in such a way that it pays attention only to the first element of the pair, not the second. And that guarantees that you can maintain order in your vector by username only, and it will ignore the signature value associated with it.
Is there any other values that we can try to search through? Or maybe there's one that just had like six names or something like that?
Yeah, I gave you two or three password files. Two or three things that it can use to generate itself. So the constructor, what the constructor is going to do is read the password file and create the vector to start with. And because the password file is created to begin with by the destructor, it's already in correct alphabet order by username. So the order property, the sorted order property of the vector is maintained through the whole process. You never have to call a sort order. You just have to make sure that whenever you insert a new entity, it goes in the right place.
That's a hidden thought right there.
Or
you said a hidden thought right
there. Well, I'm trying to see what I've left uncovered because I'm getting ready to take leave on you. So that's the kind of nitty-gritty from that chapter. We'll talk about it more, obviously, in detail next week and the week after.